Well, hello there, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 458 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a listener-supported show about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. On today's show, we are discussing the consequences associated with industrialized agriculture, and we're not coming at this big, gigantic, lofty topic through the lens of environmental consequences. We've done that before, right? We've done that so many times before on this show, linked in the show notes if you missed those episodes. But today is different because we're discussing the consequences of industrializing anything. What are the consequences with shipping all our food production somewhere else for somebody else to take care of and then package it up and pre-ship it back to us? What are the human health and wellness consequences associated with industrialized agriculture? That's what we're attempting to get into today. Now, if you are already an enthusiastic participant in your local growing community, maybe you attend your local farmers market diligently with a smile on your face every weekend. Maybe you are an investor in your local farm's community supported agriculture program. Maybe you're even growing some of your own food, or maybe even you're growing a lot of your own food yourself. If that sounds like you, if any of that sounds like you, today's conversation is going to reinvigorate your efforts. However, if you have never yet or have not yet until today thought about the impacts of industrialized agriculture on all facets of your personal, individual human life, today's interview is going to get your wheels a-turning. What are the consequences associated with buying all your food from the chain grocery store? Are your personal ethics personally aligned with industrialized food systems? And if not, how can we go about course correcting? That's today's episode. Today, to help me unpack all of that and more, is Corinne Irby. Corinne is the owner, founder, brains behind Broken Ground, which is a small business dedicated to helping you and me get reacquainted with our local growing communities. Because she makes the point aptly in today's show, and we'll get into it in a minute, but it's not to go back to a simpler time. That's not the point. The point isn't to like give up all of our modern conveniences and go back to pre-industrial era. No, that's not the point. The point is to live our modern lives, but do so with vibrant and localized food communities. Corinne, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show today. I can't wait to glean all your wisdom. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Stephanie.
Well, I love talking about food and I love talking about growing things. So you're the perfect guest. Why don't we start by you telling us who you are, what you do, and how you found yourself not only interested in permaculture, also explain to some listeners what permaculture is, but how not only interested in it, but like you decided to dedicate your life to it. So take it away.
So my name is Corinne and I own a small business in Bozeman, Montana called Broken Ground, where I teach people how to grow their own food and live more sustainably and become more self-reliant. And I do that through workshops, through design services, and through consulting with clients. And I started my business back in 2011. And I think it was basically in response to all of the bad things going on in the world, essentially, just like how your podcast is a response to how can we live more in tune and be more eco-friendly and sustainable in light of what's going on. And in light of all the ecological crises, I was involved in human rights and social justice issues. And I found that I was always being against someone or something. I got very burned out in terms of being in a very negative space of these are all of the things that we've done wrong as human beings. And I started looking for solutions. And that's when I found permaculture. And permaculture, for those of your listeners who don't know, it's a design approach for sustainable living and land use that's rooted in the observation of natural systems. So how can I mimic natural systems in the way that I design my yard, my garden, my life even my communities. And so that really opened up this door for me in terms of how to look at your life and the world in a different way, and a set of tools that I could have and I could teach other people in terms of reducing our ecological footprint, in terms of dealing with some of the ecological crises, in terms of living more lightly on the earth.
There's something very hopeful about being surrounded by plants, isn't there? I think what you were saying, there's a lot of problems in the world. Certainly for me, the future can look bleak and dreary at best, but there's some very hopeful feeling, some rejuvenation that happens when at least myself personally, and perhaps you too, is surrounded by plants.
Absolutely. I think the whole putting a seed in the soil and watching it grow and having it become food on your plate is fairly powerful. I always tell people those are those immeasurable benefits of gardening. And you can say, oh, I've grown X pounds of whatever tomatoes this year, but the intangible benefit is this, the sense of hope and abundance that you get from a garden. And I think that's one of the ways in which people become more hopeful, because it gives them a little bit of agency as well, right? When you look at the climate crisis or the global problems out there, you don't think that you can do very much as one individual. And I think when you put a seed in the ground or you start growing some of your own food, you're like, wow, I'm actually feeding my family and I'm actually cutting down on my grocery bill expenses. I'm actually giving my kids this experience in the garden. I'm creating habitat for pollinators that are coming in. So it does really give you this sense of, oh, as one person, I can make some kind of difference.
I think about the era before our food system was industrialized. I wasn't living then, so I'm not sure what life was like, but I can imagine that everyday families had ample opportunities for fresh air. They were outside working the land a lot. They had ample time to socialize with others. They had ample exercise without even trying. And so I find myself wondering, industrializing everything in the context of our conversation today, we're talking about food, but industrializing everything has certainly come with some benefits. But I always find myself wondering what we as a species have lost when we decided to pack everything up and industrialize it, have somebody else on the other side of the world do X, Y, and Z for us. Do you have any thoughts there?
So many thoughts, actually. But yeah, I think we've lost, like you say, we've become disconnected from the natural world. We've determined, or we somehow think that we're apart from nature and the natural world. And that's a real problem. That's allowed us to do and to extract from the planet as we have. But I think on a more personal level, we've lost this wildness and this reconnection. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I actually do have a window into pre-industrial food system, because my grandmother was a homesteader and she kept a diary from 1943 to 1956 that basically she wrote down everything that she did every single day. And so this was a woman who had six kids and was growing most of their own food. And what I see there is exactly what you said. Neighbors drop by all the time. The kids are always outside. They're interacting. They had chickens, they had rabbits. My grandma's is constantly making all of this different food from scratch. And on the one hand, you can see how the industrial food system really was hard on women, especially where they had to do all of this work. But on the other hand, you also see this, again, this agency in terms of her growing her own food and being connected to her neighbors, her family coming by, you know, having her kids involved in the day to day, being outside a lot. So there's a balance somewhere in there in terms of, you're exactly right. I think the washing machines, awesome. Some of the convenience stuff that we take advantage of these days is really super important. But I think we've lost awe a lot to just in the simplest things. You talk a lot about simplicity. In the simplest things, derive joy.
Yeah. I would love to read your grandma's diary. That sounds like what a gift that she left you. And you mentioned there, you know, life back then was hard on women because they were doing a lot of work. And I would just add to that, life is still hard for women. We're still doing a lot of work. We're just doing different work. We're doing work that perhaps does not nourish the body, mind, and soul. I'm going to be honest, sitting on my computer all day does not nourish my body, mind, or soul. So I'll just leave that there as my mind goes off and thinks about all the different consequences of a largely sedentary indoor life. But on your website, you make a claim, and you claim that gardening was never meant to be a solitary act. You also say that the garden is the great connector. I want your thoughts here, because post-pandemic, certainly, isolation is a big struggle for many people. The pandemic's over, and yet we're still isolated. We're working from home. We're staying in our pajamas all day. How can the garden be the antidote to isolation?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So to your first point, or my point, I guess, of the garden is gardening was never meant to be a solitary act. I think if you think about how Indigenous people gardened or foraged or hunted, that was all done as a tribe, right? A lot of food growing, or in the past and historically, has been done in community. You need to grow food in community. Why? Because it takes a lot of effort to grow your own food. And so I think with this individualistic culture that we have, we think that we have to go it alone when we have a garden or we're growing our own food. And then we feel like a failure if we suddenly don't have this really successful, abundant garden. But then, like you say, you as a mom, you're doing like 50 other things too. So how do you hope to do all of this together? And so I usually encourage my clients, and I myself have volunteer days once a week where people come and they learn, they leave with whatever I have in abundance in growing in my garden at the time, whether it's pears during pear season, whether it's mint, whether it's tomatoes, whatever it is, I reciprocate with veggies. But I find that a lot of volunteers that come and work with me, of course, a lot of it's about community building. They just want to hang out with other plant people. So it's stacking all sorts of different functions when you have a volunteer day where you have people come and help you do this thing that takes a lot of effort. You're giving them food in exchange, but you're also reweaving the web of relationships that people crave, especially after the pandemic, but even before that, because we are so isolated on our phones or in front of computers. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Offer something in exchange, and know that most people will jump at the chance to gather as a community around food. And I think we just need to remind ourselves how good that feels.
As you're talking there, Corinne, I'm thinking about my listeners who are probably, I don't want to say rolling their eyes, but they're just saying, oh, heck no, that's just not going to happen for me. The granola bar that I grabbed as I ran out the door to get to work this morning, I don't need to be connected to my granola bar. I don't need to be connected to my food. Like, who cares? We industrialized our food systems for a reason. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I totally get it. I would just encourage people to try connection in some way. It doesn't mean that you have to have a 500 square foot garden or something like that. Is there a farmer's market that you can go to where you can be connected to farmers or local producers in your area? I do think that it's hard to explain all the intangible benefits of either having a garden or going and connecting with local producers or farmers, but it's there. And I think it's something that's how we reweave the web of community in all of our areas. If you feel like there's something missing, if you feel disconnected from other people, if you don't feel like you're part of a community, you can become part of a community by growing more of your own food or participating in the food system, even if it's not as a gardener, but it's as a consumer that goes to a farmer's market and buys a fraction of your food locally. And again, I'm not a purist with that either. I think because of economics, right? And because of maybe there's not a farmer's market close by, right? There are things that are barriers to that. But taking one small step in that direction, I think is a privilege. I totally acknowledge that. But I also think that it does have all of these other benefits that you might not be able to measure, but that impact you over time.
I'm glad you mentioned the intangible benefits, because I can see how some listeners would say, oh, heck no. Growing food is way too much work. I don't have time. I don't have patience. If I was to grow everything or raise everything that I was eating, I would go hungry. I would starve. And I hear that, absolutely. However, I'm thinking about the fact that you mentioned America's emphasis on individualism, rugged individualism, if you would like to add in that adjective. We have all seen firsthand what the consequences of individualism has had on the planet, a me first attitude, right? Can you speak to the individualist way of American life as it relates to the way we buy food? I mean, we've touched on it, but let's really just beat it into the ground. Like, what are the consequences of buying all our food from the supermarket, not knowing where it came from, not knowing who grew it, whose hands grew it, not knowing whether it's sprayed with chemicals? Like, what are the consequences? Human health, human well-being, planetary, like, give me just a couple.
And all of that, for one, we don't know where things are coming from, how much these things have been sprayed, especially if they're not organic. And in addition to that, you look at the labor that it takes, and usually a lot of the labor for the kind of industrial food system is done by migrant workers that are not given a decent wage. And then you look at just the ecological cost of spraying, which has impacted our pollinator populations, which has impacted our soil and water. So it's such a multi-layered approach. It's really interesting because oftentimes in permaculture, you think about industrial ag is the problem, but agriculture is also the solution, right? Going back and rescaling to locally based food systems is actually the solution to a lot of different problems, to ecological crises, to water pollution, to soil degradation, to the climate crisis, right? And I don't like the whole kind of, it's not like we're going back to something. We're trying to reinvent another way of doing things that's more relocalized, that's localizing our economies. So if it's overwhelming for you to take on a garden, either support your local farmer in some way or go and join a community garden space. So there's so many examples across the United States of community gardens where you're collectively farming an area so that you lighten the load. We have a great example here in Bozeman where there are about 35 individuals that are part of this community garden, and they collectively farm the area. And so you can take 2 weeks off for a vacation and not worry about somebody watering the garden. And they have preservation parties where a bunch of people get together and they preserve the apples or the pears or the tomatoes. And then they also have potlucks. And so I think it's looking for ways in which I think our rugged individualism has thought, I don't have time to have a garden, so I can't participate in the food system. Well, there are countless other ways that you can do it, either through a community garden or supporting your local farmer or even getting involved in local food systems work, right? There's all sorts of different ways that you can do that. We don't all have to become gardeners. We shouldn't. We need all of these other people doing all of the other things that they do. And I think what I tell people too is even growing a cherry tomato in a pot is something.
I mean, that's how I started growing. I think it was basil on my windowsill. And you know what? That basil tasted better. Maybe it didn't. But to my taste buds, because I toiled to keep this basil plant alive, that basil tasted so much better than anything I could have purchased down the road at the grocery store. I didn't waste a leaf of it because I realized for the first time how hard and time intensive it is to grow something from seed to cultivation, let's say. So there's just so many lessons to learn. And I really am happy that you mentioned you don't have to turn your whole yard into a garden to receive these benefits that we've been talking about, but also receive the knowledge. So we're going to take our sponsor break, Karine, but when we come back, I think we did a great job hitting the why. Like, why does local food production matter? After the break, we're going to transition to the how. So how can all of us start? Maybe it's the cherry tomato in a pot. Maybe it's the basil on the windowsill. We're going to get into the how after a quick sponsor break. Nothing nurtures the world above better than the soil below, and that's why I am so excited to introduce you to Coast of Maine. Coast of Maine is an organic soil brand that offers a full range of products designed to cover all of your garden and lawn needs. In years past, my vegetable garden, I neglected the soil and I didn't have much yield. If your soil lacks appropriate nutrients for success, your garden may not succeed. And so this year, I am so excited to cultivate the soil before planting the plants with Coast of Maine's organic products. Coast of Maine believes in nurturing relationships with local retailers. So next time you're at your local retailer, look for Coast of Maine products. Get growing. Visit coastofmaine.com to find a local retailer near you. coastofmaine.com. If you've been paying attention, you've likely heard something about gut health and why zoning in on your gut health is so darn important. You need EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense. It's a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense because I have a bloating problem, friends. Yes, I do. Inflammation is not my friend. Since taking one capsule a day on an empty stomach with water, I have noticed more energy, improved skin, and here's the big one, reduced bloating. Head to myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Mother's Day is around the corner and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts. When my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, "Oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift." And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. And we're back. Today, we are talking all things gardens and growing. I'm speaking with Karine Irby. She's the owner of Broken Ground. Karine, I want to switch now to the how. Now, we'll talk about gardening later, but I want to talk about your belief that it's important for all of us, every single one of us listening, to invest in our local food system. So without even growing anything, at bare minimum, I would love it if listeners took away this. Investing in your local food systems is really darn important. Why is it important and how can we all do it?
Yeah, such a great question and something that I'm really passionate about. So one of the things that I encourage people to do, yeah, if they can't garden or even if they do, is to support local growers. And the reason for that is that money that you invest in your local producer or your local grower gets reinvested into your local economy and your community economy. So when we buy stuff from big box stores, right, or if we buy food from a big box store or a corporation, that money isn't reinvested into your city, right, or into your town. That's gets reinvested into the larger corporation and could potentially line the pockets of the CEO of that corporation. And that's one of the reasons why I love going to a farmer's market, if that's available to you, and having this relationship and directly giving my money to this person who I know lives in this community, might have children in this community, and they themselves are also investing in the community. The other thing to know too is that a lot of the local farmers or growers, they're stewards of the ecosystems that they grow on, right? So they're nurturing those ecosystems and they're protecting them. Being a farmer is a lot of work, and it's important that they, in order for them to get those yields every year to feed the community, they have to steward the land and the water and the soil, which is helping the community as a whole just be healthier. The other thing is, of course, that local food, just like you said with your basil, local food just tends to be healthier and fresher. It's just, it's been picked the day before, usually, right? Or that morning, even. And so that, and then it lasts longer. So you waste less because it lasts for a longer period of time. And then the other thing that I like to say is, you know, I view going to the farmer's market as like a social hour. It's like my chance to reconnect. Oftentimes, it's my chance to reconnect with growers who are my friends, who I don't see during the growing season because we're all super busy. So it's a chance for it, rather than being just a transaction of here's my money, give me my food, which is how it is in a grocery store. It's relational. You're actually talking to these people. How are things going on the farm? How are you doing? And then you get to actually ask them, how did you grow this? Right? You get to understand what they did. And I have just so much respect for local farmers because it takes so much effort. And then you also realize how much effort it takes. And so, like, incrementally, again, you're reweaving that web of relationships. And if there are, I think the farmers market movement is certainly growing across the country. And so it's looking for the possibility of seeing whether there are any local farmers markets in your area would be my first way that you can connect. But also, a lot of grocery stores now, especially if they're cooperatives or they're connected to local farmers and food, they will have local food. So looking for those labels of what's local in your, in the fruit and vegetable section is also a really great way, and or other products that are local to your place. It feels, even if it is in a way it's self-serving, but it feels good. It feels good to support local people, right? It feels good to put your dollars into that. And sometimes those things are more expensive, right? But one, we have to shift the narrative in terms of, oh, local organic food is so expensive. No, corporately produced industrial food is cheap. And so, because when we pay for that local food, we're paying for a lot more than just the food itself. We're paying for the livelihoods of the people growing it. We're paying for the stewardship of the land, and we're paying for reinvestment in our local economy. Now, there are totally people that can't afford it, and I acknowledge that, and there are things like SNAP dollars and other things that where we're trying to make local food more accessible, but a lot of people can, and I think for those who can, the challenge is just put a portion of your income towards local food, and that'll move the needle.
So much of what you said there, Corinne, is really powerful. Of course, listeners, if you live in a food desert, you have no access to fresh and local produce. We're not speaking to you. But for the rest of us, maybe you do have farmers markets near you. Maybe you haven't been in a while. Now's the universe telling you through me to go again. When I was living in Boston, you reminded me of my Saturday mornings, my husband, my dog. We would go to the farmer's market every single Saturday. There was one on Wednesday as well. And yes, farmers work really hard, but you know what else? They're passionate about what they do. And so to bring this back around to your statement earlier that the garden is a great connector. There's something amazing about talking face to face with the person who grew your food and who is passionate about their trade. I'm just not getting that at my local supermarket. The workers there are very nice, but they're not passionate about bagging groceries, let's say. And so that's another intangible benefit that, yeah, perhaps we can't quantify. But I can be frank and say that leaving the farmer's market every Saturday morning with bags full of all the produce I was going to eat that week, there were intangible benefits there, even though I spent a little bit more money, right? I spent a little bit more money. And just going back to that point as well, industrial food is too cheap. I have so much to say there. Number one, we need to stop scrimping and saving on food. I mean, how ridiculous is it that we'll go out and spend hundreds of dollars on a handbag, but oh no, we can't buy the pasture-raised organic eggs because they're $6.99. Like, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous, listeners. You know it's true. That's number one. Number two, when something's too cheap, something or someone is paying for it, right? Paying the cost. And for listeners who missed my interview with the CEO of Kiss the Ground, I would humbly suggest you go listen to that. It really details the problems with industrial food and our soil woes, soil health. In that case, our soil is really paying the price of us paying for too cheap food. All right, now we need to talk about growing stuff. Where I live, it's all about the green lawn that's doused in pesticides. People spend a lot of time on their lawns and zero time on gardens. So for listeners who maybe they're not going to transform their whole yard into a garden, but maybe a little plot, where would they start? What should they plant? I mean, I know like, it depends on your zone and all that, but what's step one for a complete newbie?
Yeah, really great question. I like to use my five S's in terms of where you start. Sun, soil, seeds, start small and stay close are what I use for like beginner gardeners. In terms of sun, you need 8 hours of full sun a day at least. Soil, you need to look and pay attention to what your soil is like. You're probably going to have to add amendments. Seeds, grow what you like to eat first and what does well in your particular climate. Starting small. So yes, don't take on a 500 square foot plot. Take on 1 4x8 raised bed or 2 4x8 raised beds. Make it really manageable. I always tell my clients, grow into your garden. Start with a small plot. See how much time and effort that takes. See if that's like, yeah, you know what? I'm good with that 4x8 bed, or whether you're like, oh my gosh, my kids love these peas and I want to grow more lettuce for ourselves, then you might grow and add another 4x8 bed the following year. But take it slow and then stay close. Put it as close to your back door or close to your kitchen as possible, depending on where the sun is and whether that works, because we care for and maintain what we see on a daily basis and what's super efficient for us to get to. Right? So we don't want to have to walk 50 feet or however, depending on how big your lawn is, right? We don't want to have to walk far to get things, especially your herbs, right? Your herbs that you might use daily in cooking, put those close by, whether they're indoors in pots, if you have the sun for it, or whether they're in pots on your deck or really close by so you can just step out and quickly grab some chives or some cilantro or some parsley. Those are kind of usually my five steps to get started. And then also looking to people who are maybe local nurseries, or maybe there are master gardeners in your particular region that can help and know when you plant things. Like, I have a planting calendar that's available for people who are in more cold climates, but there's always like local garden centers or local nursery or something nearby, or agriculture extension that has that information for people. But the number one thing is just to start small, especially if you don't have a lot of space, or especially because you have a bunch of other things that you're doing in your life. And if you find that you really enjoy it, then you can expand. Start small, grow what you like to eat and what does well in your climate.
Those are amazing tips. And I'm going to just add some of my own. Corinne, please tell me if these are bad tips. I will not be offended, but I'll just say what I did. So I grew some herbs on side. I had success with that. And then I moved to a raised bed on my deck. So right outside my kitchen door. My tip here is, if you have children, grow what they will eat, because if they like it, they're going to get on board. In this raised bed, very small, I grew sugar snap peas, which my children loved. The seeds go straight into the soil and they come up quick, and there's a lot of yield. It's not a hard plant to grow. So we got a lot of sugar snap peas. My kids just really got on board. They would break them right off and eat them then and there. Is that bad advice? Tell me.
That is fabulous advice. No, I think it is that whole grow what you and your family like to eat, because you have more skin in the game, right? In terms of making it that you'll pay more attention to it.
Yes.
And there's a guy, Ron Finley, who's big in the gardening movement and he's from South Central LA. And he says, kids that grow kale eat kale. Right? So it is one of those things. The other thing that I would recommend beyond that, and of course, it's something else to take on, but I always encourage people, if they have the space and if they're really excited about it, is to grow more perennial plants, right? Plants that come back year after year that are edible. So things like chives, or do you want to put in a couple fruit trees or some berry bushes, raspberries? Kids love raspberries, right? Any of those types of plants that, if you do have the space, that you could grow those things too, where you plant them once and then there's not a lot of effort to maintain them. And so I always encourage people to experiment with that a little bit if they want to, if they feel so inclined, because it just takes less water and less maintenance. And year after year, you're getting some sort of yield. But that's a next step. Go to pots first, like you said, raised bed second, maybe then you put in something larger after that. And the other thing that I would argue too is, people spend a lot of money on water, on watering a lawn and maintaining a lawn. If you are looking at ways to cut your costs, if you're going to use that water, you might as well be growing some of your own food. For 6 months of the year, I essentially bypass the vegetable and fruit section of the grocery store. You think about how much savings. Fruits and vegetables are some of the most expensive things that you're putting in your grocery bag. And so there's a savings there too for people as well. The other thing that I would say too, one last recommendation, is if you have limited space or you want to start small, start with the things also that taste the best fresh, right? So your herbs, like you said, right? That basil totally had a different taste to it, right? Because it was much better fresh. Tomatoes, lettuce, right? Spinach, those things taste best fresh, plucked out of the garden. Whereas something like a potato, it tastes good, right? But it doesn't have that same flavor profile that you would notice from taking something out of your garden. And also things that cost more. Your tomatoes, your vine ripened tomatoes at the store cost a lot more than a carrot or a potato, right? So making those types of choices too, in terms of what is more expensive, your herbs cost more. Those are definitely ways in which you can cut down on costs as well, and then provide something beautiful. Edible flowers. Some of the edible flowers are the easiest to grow and look awesome in a salad. And they're expensive if you buy them in a store or something like that. So those types of things, just some kind of, that's like a little sprinkling of joy on your salad and makes you, again, intangible benefit. And then for kids, especially, like being like, you can eat that flour. Yeah. That's pretty cool too, right? Where they're like, what? So giving your kids that experience is also awesome.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. And I'm glad you said kids who grow kale eat kale. That is true. That is so true. We actually now have, I received it for Christmas, a hydroponic indoor garden, and we're growing a lot of things, but I want to talk about the salad. We're growing all different varieties of salad greens, arugula, romaine, you name it, we're growing it. And one child is a little bit pickier than the other, but she's been experimenting, trying all the different greens we're growing, and she has decided. So one child loves arugula salads. She just goes most nights, cuts off her arugula leaves, makes her own salad. The other has chosen, she just decided she likes romaine. And now my kids are eating salad. They're 10 and 7. I did not eat salad at 10 or 7. So kids who grow kale eat kale. Kids who grow romaine eat salad at night. It is true.
Yeah. And it's such an interactive. So sometimes I like to describe, it's all great. There's been this whole movement around forest bathing and all of the benefits from walking in the forest, which I think is fabulous, right? So that's great to take a hike and to be surrounded by the natural world. But gardening is more participatory, right? Gardening, you're taking a seed and putting it in the soil. Gardening is your kids going over to your planter there and being able to cut the arugula and the romaine, right? It brings people into the natural world in a different way. And I think that's why it's so powerful. And that's why even just the littlest thing that you grow, lettuce in a pot or mint in a pot or basil in a pot, is something. And I think we need to like just underscore that time and time again for people that little things count. They do make a difference, right? And because I think a lot of people have lost their agency because they're like, I'm just one person. What can I do? All of these problems are so intractable. But if it's cliche, of course, but if multiple people are doing this, it has an impact.
Yes. I'm glad you said a feeling of a loss of agency. So many of us are suffering from that, right? When we look at these huge, gigantic problems, not just environmental, there's a lot of problems out there. I'm not even going to name them all because we'd be here all day. But you know what you can do to get back a little bit of your agency? You can plant a seed. And maybe it's going to grow into something, maybe it's not. But hey, you tried, right? Like you learned something. And use growing as a learning experience for me. I'm not that great of a grower, I'll be honest, but I use growing as a teachable experiments with my kids. And that's been great because I'm not attached to the outcome. I'm not expecting 10 pounds of tomatoes. I'm expecting to just spend time with my children as we grow the Brandywines, let's say. Corinne, tell us where we can find more of you and all your goodness online. What a conversation.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So people can go to brokengroundpermaculture.com, which is my website. I'm also available on Instagram, or you can follow me on Instagram at brokengroundmt. And I also have a YouTube channel, which is at Broken Ground. And so there are tons of videos there in terms of tips and tricks for gardening and greenhouse growing. And you can see tours of my garden and all of that stuff.
I've seen your garden and holy moly, it's amazing. It's like garden goals.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It takes some time. I won't lie. It takes a lot of time.
Thank you so much for your time, Corinne. I loved every minute of talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, for having me. Really appreciate it.
Listeners, that's our conversation today. Corinne said something in our conversation that I missed. I missed it when we were talking because I was not participating in active listening techniques. I was doing what I try not to do. And I try to be there in the conversation. I try to fully listen. But I wasn't listening in this moment. And it just so happens that Corinne said something really darn important. Corrine said that growing something, anything, whatever it is, growing anything engages children in the natural world in a different way. If I had heard that when she said it, I would have capitalized on it because what a point, right? For the parents listening, isn't that our goal at the end of the day? Industrializing everything, technologicalizing, that's not a word, but making everything reliant on technology, all of that means that we are by and large sitting at computers inside every single day. The result is that we're so disengaged from the natural world. And if we don't care about the natural world, if we don't care about the planet, why on earth would anyone, ourselves, our children, anyone, why on earth would anybody try to save it? So gardening, going to farmers markets, showing up to your local farmer's annual carrot pull celebration, whatever it is, these are all ways in which our children and us too, keyword and us too, can re-engage with the natural world because we need it. Even if we think we don't need it, we need it. Even if those intangible benefits don't seem all that important for the simple reason that we just can't quantify them, they're still important to me. And if you're here with me for minute 40-something of this podcast, I'm willing to bet they're really darn important for you as well. So gardening, instead of thinking of it as like this really hard chore, toiling in the soil with the bugs and it's miserable. Instead, think of it as another opportunity for you and your children to re-engage in the natural world. You can re-engage with the natural world in a different way, in a way that's different from going for a hike or picking up trash, right? It's a different way. I love that, Corrine, and I so wish I heard you say that when we were talking. No eco tip today, but I will see you on Thursday. I'll see you then. Reach out if you need me. Oh, and one other thing before we say goodbye. I received an email from an unhappy subscriber. You know who you are. Hello, unhappy subscriber. She said she subscribed, but she hasn't heard from me. She hasn't received any benefit and she's angry. Okay. If that sounds like you, if you've subscribed and you haven't heard anything from me or you haven't received any benefit from subscribing, I mean, every episode I've released has been extended and ad-free. So if you're not receiving benefit, you don't know how to receive these episodes, you haven't heard from me, something's wrong. Please email me. Email is in the show notes. Let's troubleshoot that together. I don't want anybody to feel upset. So reach out, email me. We'll troubleshoot that together. I will see you on Thursday and take care.